welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's crime in this hour. From the Radio Reader's Digest later on from 1946, but first, it's suspense with the story The Thimble, a CBS episode from November 22nd, 1959.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. A story of murder with a motive for everyone, as in a moment we bring you The Thimble, a story by Eliezer Lipsky, adapted for radio by Alan Sloan.
Talk about best-selling records. Here's a familiar tune about America's best-selling filter cigarette, Winston. Because only Winston has filter blend up front. Choice, flavorful tobaccos, specially selected and specially processed for filter smoking. No wonder Winston tastes good, like a cigarette should. Smoke Winston.
Yes, Miss Brady.
Mr. Morgan.
Yes.
Miss Dennis O'Neill to see you.
Could you ask Miss O'Neill to wait a few minutes? No, better yet, have her come back after lunch. Detective Russell and I are busy.
Yes, sir.
Dennis O'Neill. Now, where have I heard that name before, Joe?
Morning paper. Daughter of the house painter who died yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Heart attack, wasn't it?
Yep. Where were we?
Well, we were...
Please, Mr. O'Neill, don't touch me, Joe. Please wait outside.
I'm sorry, Mr. Morgan. This young lady just forced her way in.
The district attorney.
It's all right, Miss Brady. It's Assistant DA, Miss O'Neill, and I'm Heath. Well, as long as you're in, won't you sit down?
No, please. There's no time. You must hurry. Who's this man?
Detective Joe Russell.
Detectives, police, won't somebody do something? They're going to bury her in 2 hours.
Bury who, Miss O'Neill?
Bury my mother.
If the funeral's in 2 hours, shouldn't you be...
No, no. You must listen to me. They wouldn't listen to me at the police station. They wouldn't listen to me at headquarters. You must listen to me.
What is it you want to tell me, Miss O'Neill?
My mother was murdered. She was poisoned.
Why do you say that?
Because my mother's heart was as strong as yours. She was murdered. And he signed the death certificate himself, and when I demanded an autopsy, he refused.
Who is he?
Don't you know? Everybody knows. Everybody in the world knows it. They were more than doctor and patient, everybody knows.
Doctor who, Miss O'Neill?
Dr. Charles Cypress.
Yes, I've heard of Dr. Cypress. Isn't he a reputable doctor?
Oh, yes, he's reputable. But he poisoned my mother.
Now, Miss O'Neill, why would Dr. Cypress want to poison your mother?
Her will. Her will. She made him her executor. She left her art collection to him. He was tired of her and he wanted her money.
Miss, how old are you?
I'm 23.
Why didn't your mother leave her collection to you?
Me?
Yes, ma'am. You're overage, I should think.
You must know. Everybody knows. Don't you know about me?
Know what, miss?
I'm insane.
You say Dr. Cypress refused an autopsy?
Yes, he flatly refused.
Mm-hmm. Where is the funeral, Miss O'Neill?
Waterside Parlor, 2:00. Everybody will be there. But I'll know she was poisoned.
All right, we'll take you there.
Venushka, Venushka, where have you been? We've been searching and looking.
They don't believe me.
And these gentlemen, who are these gentlemen?
I'm Charles Morgan, Assistant District Attorney. This is Detective Joe Russell.
Venice, baby darling, go sit with the others. Let Uncle Mitya talk to them. Terrible.
Terrible. She's breaking my heart.
Are you her uncle?
No. Everybody calls Mitya Oblensky, Uncle Mitya. Mm-hmm. Oblensky Gallery is 57th Street.
Poor Temple was to have her finest exhibit tomorrow. Instead, her funeral today.
Did the girl tell you her mother was poisoned?
Of course. Oh, hysteria, despair, wildness. It is impossible. I was there. It was in my gallery, before my very own eyes.
Why do you say impossible?
We were all there. How could such a thing happen? I was there, Venice was there, Mrs. Cypress was there, and all of a sudden, oh, it hurts. The hand to the chest, the smile to the lips, then gone. Right there.
And Dr. Cypress?
There, I tell you, right there.
Uh-huh. Is the doctor here now?
Everybody is here.
Why? I'd like to speak to him.
Oh, of course, of course. I'll bring him. I'll get him.
You want a motive? Obolensky has one.
Oh, how so?
Guy handled the artist's stuff. Like stamps and collectors. Fewer of an issue of stamps, the more value. Fewer of a painter's work, ditto. No more O'Neill? No more O'Neill.
Joe, you're a ghoul. Dr. Cypress?
Yes. Mr. Morgan, I believe.
That's right. A few questions, sir.
Oh, by all means.
What did Mrs. O'Neill die of, Dr. Cypress? What was the cause of death?
Why, heart disease, of course. Thrombosis.
How did you know?
Well, it was perfectly clear. She had coronary arteriosclerosis for years. If you come to my office, Mr. Morgan, I'll show you Mrs. O'Neill's electrocardiogram for the last 15 years. Oh, as a matter of fact, you may have already seen some of my work.
Oh, where, sir?
Monographs on police medicine, methods of post-mortem diagnosis in heart condition.
Uh-huh, I see. Tell me, Dr. Cypress, Miss O'Neill, Mr. Oblensky, you and your wife were all present when the attack occurred.
That is correct. You see that elderly woman over there?
I was wondering about her. She picked a fine time to knit at a funeral service.
Oh, my wife always knits, or sews, or darns. The first day I met her on duty as a nurse in Edinburgh, she was sewing. And I've never seen her without a bit of work in her hands.
Well, I'd like to speak to her later. I'd also like to accept your offer, Doctor.
Sir?
I want to see those electrocardiograms.
Oh, yes, of course. It's very kind of you to be doing this for Venice. Makes her feel much better. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to see if I can persuade her to take a sedative.
Well, what do you think, Joe? Was there a murder?
I don't think so. While you were chatting with Uncle Oblensky, I talked with Venice some more. Found out her mother had nothing to eat that whole day but black coffee, for which they sent out.
Yeah, rules out poison.
So?
Just the same, Joe, I want to talk to the undertaker. Tell him to stop the burial.
What?
The girl is entitled to an autopsy. The doctor was too anxious to make a case for the heart condition and his own reputability as a specialist. I want a postmortem before tomorrow morning. Now, where's the telephone?
In just a moment, we will return for the second act of Suspense.
Hola, amigo. You want to know about stereo phonographs? Listen to my last bullfight on ordinary stereo.
Olé.
But now, Colombia Stereo 1. Ah, there is a corrida de toros. Free, lifelike, magnífica. There is such a big difference in stereo phonographs. With most, all you get is a couple of speakers shooting in different directions. But with Colombia, ah, hombre, you get fantastic stereo projection. What it does is to send circles of sound sweeping through every inch of a room. You are surrounded with live sound, live feeling, live passion. Ole! Ole! How they cheered me. Ask your Colombia phonograph dealer to demonstrate Stereo One by Colombia. Prices start as low as $39.95 for portables, $129.95 for consoles. El picador! Who let that bull out?
Hello.
Dr. Wyman?
Oh, speaking.
Doctor, I want you to arrange to secure the body of a woman for an autopsy. Temple O'Neill, age 55.
Great painter. Greatest woman painter since Rosa Bonheur.
You know her?
I know her work. She dropped dead in the Oblensky Gallery, didn't she?
Yeah. What do you know about Dr. Charles Cypress?
He's a good man on cardiology.
Uh-huh. Private life?
Delayed adolescent playboy. Lives high.
Tell me more.
Oh, gambling, women, the usual.
Any connection between him and the lady painter?
Oh,
that I wouldn't know. I know very little about live people. Why?
Well, seems he refused a relative's request for an autopsy.
Well, he's the doctor in the case. I think you'll find that his diagnosis will stand up.
Well, that could be. Just the same, I want you to do this postmortem yourself. Hmm?
Okay, I'll do the PM. I always wanted to meet O'Neill. Great painter. Terrific technique with the palette knife. Goodbye.
Mr. McCormick, I see you've come to see the chart.
Yes, doctor. Yes, I have.
All right, fine. Mr. Morgan, this is my wife, Mrs. Cypher.
How do you do?
Do you need me, sir? I'll just sit with a poor girl a bit.
Well, Dr. Cypress has given her a sedative, Mrs. Cypress. I'd like you to stay.
I'll do that, sir. You can mind if I get on with my sewing.
Not at all. But I understand you carry it with you wherever you go.
Well, it wouldn't have been me if I didn't. They say something was wrong with me without a bit of sewing in my hand.
Oh, here, Mrs. O'Neill's chart.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when... Oh, I see you have them in chronological order.
Mm-hmm. You understand them?
Well, frankly, sir, I only know that an electrocardiogram gives a symbolic representation of the functioning of the heart.
Well put. Now, this line here, the spikes made by the tracing pen are the systole, the domes, the diastole. Now, here you see a cardiogram taken after Mrs. O'Neill's first heart attack 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the variation, Mr. Morgan. Here.
Mm-hmm. And right here. Here, this looks like another severe attack.
Well, you have a very good eye, Mr. Morgan.
They ranged over a period of 12 years.
Yes.
Why didn't you tell Venice about her mother's heart condition?
The poor bear and her troubles are in could be adding worry to her poor sick mind, sir.
My wife has spoken for me, Mr. Morgan.
I see. Tell me, Mrs. Cypress, did you ever nurse Venice?
Aye.
That would be professionally?
Because when she was having delusions and persecutions, till the time the poor lass was sent away for institutional care, many's the next I stayed with her to calm her fears.
Just one more question, Doctor, and I believe we'll be through.
Aye.
You were made executor of Mrs. O'Neill's estate, and as I understand it, she willed you her art collection. Now, I can understand the executorship. But why did Mrs. O'Neill leave you her art collection?
Sir, I can explain the cause of that, if you don't mind.
Please, Mrs. Cypress.
The girl hated pictures. There was an I was caring for her, and she broke away from me and slashed about the studio with a knife, destroying her mother's canvases in rage and hatred.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think I've taken up enough of your time, but I may have to call upon you for grand jury appearances. I'll want to go over the material I discussed with you today. You'll hear from me.
Seen the papers?
Yeah, don't tell me. Let me guess.
D.A. Hulk's funeral, foul play feared. Artist's funeral is called off by district attorney. Autopsy ordered in mystery
okay,
death.
Okay, Joe, you made your point.
What are you going to do?
Well, grand jury sits at three. I'm going to have all the witnesses in here one by one before we go in. And you and I are going to go over their stories right up to the last minute. Because if Dr. Weinman doesn't come up with something, we're liable to end up with nothing.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of Suspense.
Welcome, recording star Mel Torme.
It's terrible trying to sing with a bad cold. So I always take four-way cold tablets to relieve cold miseries fast.
Good idea. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
When you catch cold, try my way. Take four-way cold tablets. Fast way to relieve cold distress and feel better quickly.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
Our program will continue in a moment after a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. Had dandruff for years? Now get rid of it in 3 minutes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair. Rub in 1 minute. Add water. Lather 1 minute. Then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch. Embarrassing dandruff gone. Fitch can also leave hair up to 35% brighter. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today.
Everybody outside, Joe?
Except Dr. Weinman. He said he'd be a little late.
How come?
I was telling him about the job you made me do calling off the ceremony. I was telling him how Mr. Cypress went right on sewing, and he jumped like he'd been shot.
Did he say anything?
Just mumbled.
Yeah. All right, we'll stall till he gets here. Look, I'll tell you what. Let's talk to Uncle Mitya Oblensky. I want to get the time element of this straight.
Sure. Mr. Mitya Oblensky.
Yes, Mr. Morgan. What is it, Mr. Morgan?
Mr. Oblensky, I merely want to clarify one item. The time. Checking your statements, I find that you are the only person who was certain of the exact time Mrs. O'Neill put her hand to her chest and said that...
Oh, it hurts.
Yeah.
Again, so little a smile, then gone. How I know it is 7 minutes to 11?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Very simple. We are hanging portrait of a girl in blue.
Yeah, go on. No, wait. Who's we?
The doctor is on the ladder. He holds actually the picture. On the floor, myself, standing to one side. Next to me, Venice. Mm-hmm. Right in front of the picture, Temple O'Neill. Next to her, Mrs. Cypress.
What was she there for?
With her needle and thread, perhaps. A hanging has to be moved, a stitch here, a stitch there.
Yeah, that's what she said. Go on.
In fact, not just 5 minutes before, she has sewed a tear in some velvet surrounding a little abstraction. Very handy to have around a needlewoman, no?
Yeah, the time, Mr. Oblensky. How do you know the time?
Very simple. When Mrs. Cypress dropped her thimble.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
Well, just as we get the blue girl properly hung, she drops the thimble. I get on my knees to pick it up from under the table. I look across the room as I come out from the table under, and I look at the clock. 7 minutes to 11.
And at that moment, Mrs. O'Neill died.
Precisely. As I'm going on my hands and knees after the thimble, she is taken.
Okay, thank you. Please wait outside with the others.
Mr. Morgan, Doc Wyman's here. The grand jury's ready.
Look, ask him for a few more minutes, Grace, huh? Morning, Doctor. What do you got?
Well, Dr. Cypress was right. Mrs. O'Neill had an advanced sclerotic condition of the heart area. It was entirely proper for her physician to infer that death had been caused by coronary occlusion.
So then she wasn't poisoned. No case.
You want me to finish?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why don't you ask Mrs. Cypress why she did it?
Mrs. Cypress?
Sure, call her in. Tell her you know how and then ask her why. Then you can go in and ask for a murder one indictment.
Well, maybe you know how, but I don't.
The cause of death was a small, sharp instrument thrust through the nape of the neck into the medulla oblongata, a portion of the brain governing the respiratory tract.
How do you know that?
I found the instrument lodged in the brain. It was a needle. When Russell told me the old girl had a habit.
Habit? A compulsion?
Habit of sewing all the time.
Listen to this, Joe. Go ahead, Doctor.
I then found the hole in the back of Mrs. O'Neill's skull.
Wait, wait, I just came in.
Of course. The thimble. Joe. Joe, go out and get Mrs. Cypress.
Mrs.
And tell her to bring her sewing. Mrs. Cypress, you sewed some black velvet, didn't you?
Oh, yes, sir. Frame in the picture, yes.
Uh-huh. And velvet is soft.
Very soft, sir.
Would you need a thimble for that?
No, sir.
But you would need a thimble to force a heavy darning needle through human flesh. And as a nurse, you would know the medulla oblongata was one place such a thrust could cause instant death. And in your constant companion, your sewing kit, you could hide the weapon. Come on, Mrs. Cypress. The grand jury is waiting. I'd like to have your story.
You cannot prove it, sir.
Oh, Mrs. Cypress, I think you know better than that.
I strongly doubt you can prove it.
Nothing would be simpler. You can read this autopsy report for yourself at the bottom of the page. The needle was found by Dr. Weinman in the medulla. Death was instantaneous. Now, the needle could have been thrust into her brain only by the person standing next to her.
There were four persons in the room.
Only one had a thimble. All right, Mrs. Cypress. What do you want to do?
Sir, what would you do? If you saw the man you married on the other side change before your eyes and grow too great for his old love, what would you do when a poor Fay Lossie blurted out the story of a rain withered affairs with your own husband? What would you do if you knew the one who stole him away from you had a condition of a heart, and your own husband being a physician, there was a likelihood of death being ascribed to that ailment and passing without notice, what with the death certificate and all? And you had the means of taking him back from her forever and keeping him once you told him the truth and her buried and forgotten. What would you do, Mr. Morgan?
I wouldn't murder her, Mrs. Harper.
Well, I did.
All right, Mrs. Sanders. Let's go into the grand jury.
Mr. Morgan, will you not wait till the doctor brings back my sewing kit? I'm lost without it.
I'm afraid we're going to have to keep you away from needles. For a long time, ma'am. A very long time.
Listening to The Thimble, a story by Eliezer Lipsky, written for Suspense by Alan Sloan. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of Suspense.
Are you all out of tune because you're irregular? Then help yourself get back in tune with Kellogg's All Brand. You'll feel right on pitch when Kellogg's All Brand goes gently to work. Relieves constipation due to lack of bulk by supplying your system with bulk-forming whole bran. Yes, a daily bowlful of Kellogg's All Brand with milk helps put you right back in tune. The natural way. The good-tasting way, too. Fact is, Kellogg's All Brand is the one brand cereal that combines proved effectiveness with appetizing taste and crispness. It never gets mushy in milk. So remember, if constipation's a problem, gentle it away, as millions do, with Kellogg's All Brand. The good food way to keep regular as clockwork. ALL-BRAN. Kellogg's All Brand. At your grocer.
Heard in tonight's story were Whitfield Connor, Terry Keane, Paul McGrath, Joe DeSantis, Danny Occo, Maurice Hartland, Ruth Tobin, and Jane Rose. Listen again next week when we return with the classic story of nature's imbalance. On one side, the frightful Formicidae Dorylaeae ant, and on the other, a man who knew no fear. The story, Leiningen versus the Ant. Another tale well calculated to keep you in... on CBS Radio.
Suspense, Untuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from November 22nd, 1959. This is an hour of crime, Untuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, from the same year that actor Claude Rains was starring in three motion pictures, Deception with Betty Davis, the strange movie Angel on My Shoulder with Paul Muni and Ann Baxter, and in the film Notorious, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, which starred Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman, Claude Rains now appears in the Radio Reader's Digest in the story Murder in the Big Bowl, a CBS episode from November 7th, 1946.
Remember, our card will best express a perfect taste. The makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you an exciting story of mystery and intrigue starring... Claude Rains. For more than a third of a century, quality has been a habit with the makers of Hallmark cards. They are the Hallmark cards. They are the kind of cards we can be proud to send, proud to receive. And now to preside over the Hallmark program this evening, here's a young man well known to Broadway, both as actor and producer, Richard Kallman.
Thank you, Tom Shirley, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If ever a man knew his own mind, it's Claude Rains. Where most actors would gladly roll a hoop from Broadway to Hollywood for a picture contract, Claude Rains kept saying no until they told him that they had just the part for him, the lead in The Invisible Man. And where another actor would have been indignant at this insult to his profile, Claude Rains took the part and scored a big hit in it. And where a lot of successful movie actors loll around marble swimming pools, Claude performs manual labor on his Pennsylvania farm. He's come up from that farm to be with us tonight. And we know our own mind about that. We're glad. The Hallmark program proudly presents Claude Rains in Murder in the Big Bow by Anthony Abbott. Early one dismal morning, with a low fog hanging over the city of London, a doorbell rang long and continuously in the house of a man named Grodman. Grodman was a retired Scotland Yard inspector who had achieved considerable fame both as a detective and as the author of a bestseller entitled Criminals I Have Caught. So it was only natural for the woman next door to come running to him for help at the first sign of trouble.
Mr. Grodman? Oh, can't we hear him, Mr. Grodman? Look, the detective, come down here and answer your door.
My dear woman, please take the finger off that bell. What am I trying to do?
Begging your pardon, Mr. Grodman. I'm sorry about the bell, but I just had to speak to you.
It's 5 in the morning. Don't you know it's a criminal offense to wake me up at 6:30?
Don't do it again, sir. Never again, sir. If I had to this time, it's Mr. Constance.
What, Mr. Constance?
My new boarder, sir. You know him, don't you? That nice young man from the West End.
What about him, Mrs. Barrett?
Oh, it's awful, Mr. Grodman. We must come over and see him right away. He's dead, poor chap. Dead.
Well, if he's dead, why should I come over and see him? For heaven's sake, call in a doctor or the police.
But you're the police.
I'm not anymore, Mrs. Bradham. I've been with the yard for 2 years now. Calm yourself and get in touch with an undertaker.
Oh, I can't do anything, Mr. Grodman. You know, I'm mortally afraid of the dead. Oh, won't you help me?
Oh, I'll help you. Give me a chance to get into some clothes, and I'll be over at your place in 5 minutes.
Thank you ever so much, Mr. Grodman. But if it's just the same to you, I'll wait for you right here. It's up here on the second floor, Mr. Grodman. I was supposed to serve him his breakfast at 6:30, but he never came out of his room.
Which one is it?
This one, sir. You see, the tray's still there. I left it on the floor when Mr. Constant didn't answer.
What makes you think he's dead, Mrs. Bradham?
Well, he must be dead. Something. The door's locked on the inside, and he won't open it.
I see. Mr. Constant. Mr. Constant.
Oh, I knocked louder than that, Mr. Grodman.
Did you try the door?
I did everything, sir.
Well, in that case, you'd better let me have your key.
My key won't open this door, Mr. Grodman. Not when it's locked on the inside. You'll have to force your way in.
Perhaps you're right.
Be careful, sir. Don't arm yourself.
Right, coming now. One more try. And there we are. Mr. Constant? Mr. Constant?
Isn't he in there?
He doesn't seem to be. Well, just a moment, Mrs. Bradham. Don't come in here.
Come on. What happened?
Don't come in here, please. It's not a pretty sight.
Oh, good heavens. Don't let me see it.
Now, quick, Mrs. Bradham, you run downstairs and call the police. His throat's been cut.
You mean he committed suicide?
Well, I can't say that as yet. It might be suicide. On the other hand, it might be murder.
Pity of it, Mr. Grodman. The terrible pity of it.
Now, dry your eyes, Mrs.
Adam. You can't be of any assistance, Inspector Corley. She burst into tears every time he asks you a question.
But he was such a nice young man, Inspector. Not a bit of fuss to him. Never a day behind on his rent.
When did you see him last, Mrs. Bedham?
Last night, about 8 o'clock. I turned his head down over there. What little did I expect?
I know. Were the windows open when you left, Mrs. Bedham?
I don't believe so, sir. I can't be sure, but I think they were locked, just as they are now.
You didn't test them this morning, did you?
How could I, sir? I haven't been in here this morning, not until you called me.
She's right, Inspector. I didn't allow anyone into the room until the police got here. All right, Mrs. Bedham, I guess that'll be all for the present.
Oh, thank you, sir. And I do hope you find out what happened to poor Mr. Constance.
Yeah.
He was such a nice young man.
Now, if that woman sniffles again, I'll strangle her with my bare hands.
Patience, Mr. Grodman. Even if you are an author now, you must remember you're still a Scotland Yard man at heart.
I'm nothing of the sort, Inspector. I never could stand talking to women, and I wouldn't now if this confounded case went for baffling.
Well, baffling? Don't tell me the great Mr. Grodman is puzzled by this affair.
Now, listen to me, Corley. We've been over this room with a fine tooth comb. And the razor, or the knife, but still constant. Still hasn't turned up yet.
Well, that doesn't alarm me particularly.
Well, it should. Now, if Constance committed suicide, that razor would be here. A man that slashes his own throat hasn't time to conceal the weapon he did it with.
Granted, but Constance might have been murdered.
If Constance were murdered, how did the murderer get into this room? Through the locked window? Or through the door I had to break down?
Well, I fail to see your point.
You usually do.
No, Grodman, don't be sarcastic. After all, this isn't your case, and in spite of the high opinion you have of yourself, the Yard still manages to function without you.
Don't change the subject, Corley. This isn't a matter of personal rivalry anymore, now that I've left your organization.
Sorry to contradict you, but you didn't leave the Yard. You were retired. The old man and I were afraid you were slipping. That's why we retired you, so you could sit at home and write books.
Well, it wouldn't hurt you to read some of those books, especially at a time like this.
No, don't worry, Grodman. I'll handle this case myself, thank you. Solve it according to my usual methods.
Very well, Mr. Inspector. I'll bow out. But if you handle this case according to your usual methods, I doubt if you would ever solve it.
I'm coming.
Yes?
Mr. Grodman?
Oh, naturally, yes. That's what my mandate says for me.
Well, I...
Come to the point, young woman. Your name is Viola Dean. You live in Berkeley, and you've come to see me about the Constant children.
Good heavens. How did you know?
Telephone twice today. My maid told me all about it. Now, come in, won't you?
Oh, thank you.
Why? Pretty little thing, aren't you? Wouldn't you frown so much?
Mr. Grodman, would you help me? You see, I know something about the case. Eric Carson was a friend of mine.
Oh.
One time we were very fond of each other.
How long is this?
Quite recently. That is, we broke off quite recently. Just about a week before the murder.
What murder?
Well, the murder. Eric was killed, wasn't he?
I don't know, do you?
Well, I understand he was. At least Inspector Corley led me to believe.
Oh. Inspector Corley's been over the field, isn't he?
Yes.
I was wondering how long it had taken to find out about you and Eric Constant.
You knew we were friends.
Don't be surprised, young woman. Mrs. Bradham told me all about
it. Mrs. Bradham?
The landlady. She not only has a big mouth, but long ears.
Well, I have nothing to hide.
In that case, Inspector Corley won't harm you.
See, I wasn't worried about myself. It's Tom I was thinking about. Tom Mortlake.
Who's Tom Mortlake?
Why, a friend of mine.
Another friend?
I'm sorry I said that, Mr. Grodman. He's more than just a friend. Tom is the man I'm going to meet.
Now, that's more like it. And tell me, were Tom and Eric rivals for your hand, so to speak?
Well, more than less. Well, but Tom didn't kill him.
Now. Just you answer my questions, you see. What have we got on?
Nothing as yet, except the fact that She and Eric had an argument the night before the murder.
Will you please stop calling it a murder? You'll have me believing it was in a moment. Where did the argument take place?
In Tom's apartment. About 7 o'clock in the evening.
You told you this?
No, no. I was in the apartment when it happened.
I see. Do you suppose I can find Tom there now?
Yes, I believe he's home, Mr. Gordon. Will you go over and see him?
I will, if you answer just one more question.
What is it?
Tell me, Miss Dean. What makes you so sure Tom Northcote did not commit a murder?
I know he didn't, Mr. Gordon. I know. Because I love him.
A mistake, Mr. Cartman, a stupid mistake, and there's nothing I can do about it now.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Tom. If a man lies to a police inspector, he has a right to rectify that lie.
Don't you see, sir? It won't do any good. I shouldn't have lied in the first place.
Why did you?
Well, I was afraid. I read about Eric's death in the papers the morning it happened. I was sure the police would come to me sooner or later. Because of that argument we had the night before.
So you made up an alibi for yourself.
Well, I had to do something, Mr. Godman. I had no way of proving I didn't kill Eric. I couldn't prove I was right here in my room when it happened, so I said I was out of town.
And Inspector Corley picked you up.
Up and down and every which way. I never made such a mess of anything in all my life.
Well, now, I wouldn't worry too much about it if I were you. As long as you're not hiding anything else from me.
You're not, are you? Well, there is just one more thing I haven't told you. I used to live in Mrs. Braddon's rooming house.
When was this?
Oh, about 6 months ago. I had the same room Eric was in.
Well, I must say, that's a strange coincidence.
Coincidence? It's worse than that, Mr. Godman. Unless you can help me, it's the one thing that's going to put a noose around my neck.
Don't be a fool, Tom. This is England. You won't hang for a murder you didn't commit.
Morgan?
Yes?
Open up, Mr. Morgan. Inspector Crawley here.
Just a moment. Yes, Inspector? What is it?
Come with me, young man. You're wanted for the murder of Eric Constant.
Standing on opposite sides of a wire screen, Tom Mortlake and his visitor, Mr. Grodman, converse as best they can in the prison where the young man is being held for murder. Presently, a guard appears to terminate the interview.
I've got Mr. Grodman.
All right, Dan. I was just about to go anyway.
So, could you tell Viola I was asking for her?
Why, of course, Tom, and you won't have to ask for her very much longer. With any luck at all, I'll have you out of here this afternoon.
I'm ever so much obliged.
Not at all.
Sit there.
Thank you.
Well, well, Mr. Grodman, I presume.
Well, well, Mr. Corley, I presume. You're just the man I wanted to see here. Come here, you old goat. I've got to talk to you.
Well, for heaven's sake, man, you don't have to catch me by the collar.
You're lucky I don't grab you by the throat. Listen to me, Corley. Have you gone completely out of your mind?
I beg your pardon?
Don't stand there with your mouth gathering air. You know what I'm talking about. That Mortlake boy. Are you seriously charging him with the murder of Eric Constant?
I am.
By what right? You can't even prove a murder was committed.
Well, perhaps I can't just now, but I shall by the time we go to court.
Court? You have the audacity to go to court on the flimsy thread of evidence you've strung together?
It's not as flimsy as you think, Grodman. Mortlake had a key to the murdered man's room.
Oh, he killed him with it, I suppose.
No, he didn't kill him with it, but he might have used it to sneak into Constance's room and lock the door from inside.
Nonsense. If Mortlake had locked himself in, he couldn't have gotten out.
Well, not necessarily. There's such a thing as leaving through a window and locking it from the outside.
Have you ever performed this feat of legerdemain?
No, but there are people who can. As a matter of fact, I plan to have one in the courtroom when we go to trial.
Corley, you're deliberately trying to frame this boy on insufficient evidence, and if you persist in going to court, I shall disgrace you in public.
I don't believe you can, old man. Either as Grodman the author or as Grodman the former inspector of Scotland Yard.
Listen to me. On page one of my book, you'll find three questions which must be answered before a murder can be solved. When? Where? How? Now, do you know when this so-called murder was committed, Mr. Inspector?
Approximately, yes.
What time?
Well, according to the coroner's report, the time of death was established at 7 o'clock in the morning.
You're quite sure it was 7 o'clock.
Positive.
I see. Now, if that's true, Tom Mortlake wouldn't have had time to commit the murder and get away without being seen.
Why?
Because at 7 o'clock on the morning in question, I had already broken into the dead man's room.
Any news yet, Mr. Trotman? Is the jury still?
Now, Miss Dean, don't worry about the jury. It takes time to deliberate a case of this sort. After all, a man's life is at stake.
But Mr. Trotman, if anything happened to Tom, I think I just died.
Now, don't talk that, my girl. From a professional standpoint, the trial's been a farce from beginning to end.
You think so?
Why, of course. The Crown didn't prove anything. A lot of hocus-pocus about locking a door from the outside. Grandstand play, that's all that is.
But suppose it worked?
It cannot work. Without the murder weapon, Corley hasn't got a leg to stand on, and that's why he put on such a big show. To save his skin at the Yard. The old butterhead. If he had any sense, he never would have taken the case to trial.
I heard you, Mr. Grover.
Well, I'm delighted you did, Mr. Inspector. If you'd listened to me in the first place, you might not have had all this trouble.
What trouble?
Don't lie to me, Corley. It doesn't become you. You know very well this Mortlake affair will finish you at the Yard.
You still think he's innocent, Grover?
Innocent? I'll stake my professional reputation on it.
You'd better not. Tom Mortlake was just convicted of murder.
Talbot, I beg of you, don't allow this verdict to stand. If that boy goes to the gallows, it'll be the greatest miscarriage of justice in the history of England.
I can't say that I agree with you, Mr. Grodman, but even if I did, what could I do about it?
Any number of things, sir. As Home Secretary, you can set the verdict aside. You could declare a mistrial. You could pardon the prisoner, and you could arrest Inspector Corley for willful and deliberate misuse of his knowledge of the crime.
Hear, hear now. I can't have you say such things in my office. Tom Mortlake was given a fair trial. Mortlake was convicted by a jury of his peers.
Bakers, Sir Talbot. Bakers, tailors, laundrymen, candlestick makers. These are the men who convicted Mortlake.
Sir, in this country, the opinion of those men is the law of the land.
But if the opinion of our countrymen is what you want, why don't you look at this petition? It's signed by 10,000 of our citizens. And every one of them a sympathizer for Tom Mortlake.
I'm sorry, Mr. Grodman, but petitions of this sort have no standing in our courts. The execution will take place at dawn.
Cup of tea, Mr. Grodman?
Thank you, Mrs. Bradham. We'll make it.
That's all, sir. I'm glad to be of service to you, especially at a time like this.
Yeah. You seem to be quite nervous, Mrs. Bradham.
Good heavens, I'm petrified. I don't know what I'd have done if you hadn't called me over here and asked me to sit up with you. I never could have spent the night alone in my own house.
What would you have done?
Well, I don't know. Oh, I just can't help thinking about that nice young man.
Which nice young man?
Well, both of them, I guess. Except that it's hard to think of a convicted murderer as a nice young man.
Why? Don't nice people ever commit murder?
Oh, shouldn't think so, Mr. Grodman. Well, I mean, well, for heaven's sake, what are you staring at me for?
I wasn't
staring at you, Mrs. Brennan. I was just peering into your mind.
Goodness, what's that?
Telephone, Mrs. Brennan. Now, don't shake so hard. Get in. Yes?
Mr. Grodman, this is Violet Keith.
Oh, yeah, yes, my dear.
It's no use, Mr. Grodman. The warden won't do a thing.
I see.
Oh, isn't there anything else? Isn't there any way we can save Tom?
No. Don't cry, Viola. It isn't over yet. Not yet.
What do you mean?
I mean there's still a way of convincing Sir Talbot that Tom isn't guilty.
How?
By getting a confession from the one who is guilty. Mrs. Bradham, quick, get your coat on.
What?
Get your coat on, I said. You and I are going to the Home Secretary's office to free an innocent man. Open up in there. Open up.
Good heavens, Robin, what's the meaning of this?
Oh, stand aside, Mr. Corley. Mrs. Bradham and I have got to see Sir Talbot.
See me at a time like this?
He's got our hands full tonight.
Yeah, but I've solved the murder, Inspector. I know who did it and exactly how it was done.
Robin, will you get out of here?
What's the matter with you, Mr. Corley? Don't you want to see justice done, or are you afraid it'll ruin your reputation at the Yard?
Well, you blackguard, you're stalling for time. You haven't any new evidence.
Haven't I? Mrs. Bradham, turn the razor.
What razor?
This one, sir.
Right. What on earth is that?
That, Sir Talbot, is the murder weapon. The razor that killed Eric Constance. An examination of the bloodstains will prove it beyond any doubt.
Where did you get this, Grodman?
I found it in a coat pocket of the suit I was wearing on the morning of the murder. The murderer put it there.
But it is preposterous. You were with me on the morning of the murder.
Exactly, Mr. Inspector. I was with you and Mrs. Bradham. But you see, Mrs. Bradham was downstairs phoning the police when the murder was committed.
Good heavens, Grodman, have you taken leave of your senses?
Not at all, Mr. Corley. You know yourself what an unusual case this is. Only someone who spent a great deal of time at the Yard can understand the purpose of this crime, the insidious reason it was committed.
What are you driving at?
Revenge, Mr. Inspector. The murderer was obsessed with the idea of getting revenge on the Yard because the old man didn't think he was much good anymore. That's why he wanted to leave them with a case that just couldn't be told. The perfect crime.
Godman, are you out of your mind? Do you think I killed Eric Constance?
If I thought you killed Eric Constance, I would not be here, Mr. Inspector. Don't you understand? Eric Constance wasn't dead when I broke open his door on the morning of the murder.
What?
He was sleeping peacefully in his bed. Under the influence of a drug he'd been given the night before.
But, Mr. Grodman, if Mr. Constant wasn't dead when you opened the door, when was he killed?
Immediately afterward, Mrs. Bradham. I knew you wouldn't step into that room after what I told you. And when you went downstairs to phone the police, I committed the murder.
Good Lord, why?
Why? Because I never got over being retired by the Yard. I wanted to see you idiots squirm and fume over a case you couldn't solve. I counted on your stupidity, Mr. Inspector, but I never thought you'd be stupid enough to convict an innocent man.
For an exciting performance. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Raines was born in London, not very far from the scene of tonight's Hallmark drama. But many years ago, he became a naturalized American citizen. I've sometimes wondered what prompts a man to do that, and now I have an opportunity to find out. Would you mind telling us, Claude?
Yeah, I'll tell you what prompted me, Dick. It's quite simple, really. I love this country. I think there's a kind of special devotion that a man gives to the nation of his own free choice. I feel a great deal the same way about America as a celebrated French writer, André Maurois, feels about America, as he expressed it in the Reader's Digest. I embrace America. I salute its courage and audacity, its kindliness and goodwill, its turbulent energy and unquenchable zest. I love America because I find here freedom and discipline. Crises that drive other people to revolution are solved here by orderly, democratic methods. I think I love your country because it is the great hope of mankind. I surrender my affections to America because of its unconquerable habit of laying down its life and treasure to maintain the forces of good in the world. Against the warm earth of America, fertile with new strength and promise, I lay my heart to beat.
Be seen in the Warner Brothers picture Deception. Murder in the Big Bowl was dramatized by Robert Sloan from the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Loeb, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtful taste, your thoughtfulness. Tom Shirley speaking, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Rigney Building, Chicago 11.
The Radio Reader's Digest on Tuned 2 yesterday from November 7th, 1946 on CBS, bringing the curtain down on this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.